It's awesome to be back. Actually, it's awesome to be everywhere, anywhere. Did I just say everywhere? I think anywhere is awesome to be. So you just tune in to Set for Success with your host, me. That's Richard Lannon. And we're going to continue what? That journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And we're going to do this through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes, to help you create the success that you deserve. And don't you deserve to be successful? Whatever success means to you, you deserve it. It's time for the Set for Success quote, or do I call it the Set for Success quote time? The warrior lives a full life of adventure, living on the edge of opportunity. Life on the edge keeps them in a space of heightened awareness and totally in the moment. Therefore, no matter what comes their way, they are prepared to deal with it. Now, that is actually a quote from an author of a best-selling book called Harmonic Wealth, The Secret of Attracting the Life You Want. It was actually done by James Arthur Ray, who is actually convicted of a felony negligent homicide. And it's part of the New York bestseller. Now, James Arthur Ray is not on the show today, but I do have another guest that has a very interesting back. And I always wonder what it would be like to live on the edge. Actually, prior to about 3 years ago, I think I was doing that. Tried new things, made things happen. Nowadays, I sort of wonder, am I really living up to my full potential? And I'm thinking sometimes that maybe other people think the same way. And so that's partly why I sort of went with that coach. I'm guessing that business people, professionals, and just everyday people like you and me, we know someone who just maybe we think doesn't fit in. And we might even look at them and say, wow, you know, they really live on the edge. Maybe we even wonder what it would be like to be them. What is their recipe, their secret recipe to what they're doing? I suspect living on the edge is a broader concept that most people could only imagine doing. It just might be about the whole picture, about everything that is you, whether it's from what you do, to what you eat, to what you say, to the decisions you make, and the adventures that you take. Yes, that just rhymed, the adventures that you take. I met my guest today about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago in St. John's, Newfoundland while visiting some family. And his name is Sean Stratton. He's a young guy, I consider him a young guy, who's adventured the world, whose activities have led him to interesting career and interesting places. Now, he is a professional speaker and author. I believe the book is called Teams on the Edge, which provides the reader a front row seat during challenging wilderness expeditions to remote locations in places like India, Mexico, Alaska, British Columbia, and the Yukon. Along the way, Sean highlights the power of team dynamics and life-saving decision-making to navigate isolated mountain ranges, treacherous glaciers, and raging rivers. I just love those words. Isolated mountain ranges, treacherous glaciers, and raging rivers. Gives you a real image of what some of the stuff that this man has done. He's a runner and a vegan, someone who feeds his body and his mind what it needs. Sean is heavily into healthy living. These days, he hangs his hat in Ottawa, so a little shout out for Ottawa there. So, Sean, you know what? I really appreciate you joining me on Set for Success today, so welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Look forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, I you know what? Just so our listeners know, I mean, you are off in Calgary today. You're involved in a few things, so we are doing this over the phone. But I just wanted to maybe just start off with a bit of a base question for the listeners. You know, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you've had a heck of a personal life journey.
Yeah, I've been pretty fortunate to make it where I am today, and had a lot of interesting experiences along the way. But I think everybody's got an interesting journey how they get there, but some are not the most conventional ways. I grew up in St. John's, Newfoundland, and you know, I got to correct you. I think we first met at the CAPS conference in Calgary.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, there
and,
you go.
I think I briefly first met you there, and then we made the Newfoundland connection there.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next time, I think you were in Newfoundland.
Well, you know, just like yourself, yeah. I meet people all over the place, and you know, I often think in terms of, okay, well, where did I connect with that person? I know we had coffee one time at a little place in downtown St. John's.
Yeah.
And that. So from St. John's, Newfoundland, tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I grew up there, had a great family life, very active in sports, tried just about everything. I have two brothers, and I grew up in the Boy Scouts, doing lots of camping. It was Boy Scouts back then. Now it's just Scouts Canada, because actually as I was finishing up, they've started allowing girls. And interesting enough, my 5-year-old daughter's going to start Beavers next week. So that's exciting. But yeah, grew up in the Scouts and just loved adventures, loved camping. In the high school, I got it really involved in water polo was kind of my sport. And then on the triathlon, started triathlons the last couple of years and running races. And that's kind of carried on for a lifetime, that love of triathlon and swimming and running and biking and Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and you've started like a business that I guess some years ago, and I don't quite know when, but if I read up your bio a little bit, and you spent like 15 years or something in wilderness adventures, is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I left Newfoundland, went off to university at Dalhousie, and didn't really know what I was going to do, and ended up taking a course on adventure-based experiential education.
Okay.
I still remember the name of it. And that, for me, was my light bulb moment. That course was all about learning about using the wilderness as a tool for personal growth and development and taking people on expeditions, but not just, you know, teaching them the outdoor wilderness skills, but also teaching them life skills and leadership skills and conflict resolution and communication. And I just kind of ate that class up and learned about some organizations, Outward Bound and the National Outdoor Leadership School, and kind of the world-leading organizations in this field, and learned that I could get paid to travel the world and help people and travel to exotic locations. That sounds great. And I spent the next few years building my resume and eventually got on with the National Outdoor Leadership School. Knowles, it's kind of a large $30 million nonprofit out of the U.S. that has programs all over the world that focus mainly on taking university and college students on semester programs focused on leadership development. And I kind of worked freelance in outdoor education for those 15 years, but for kind of 10 of them, Knowles was kind of my main provider. And yeah, managed to travel the world with that and kind of lived out of my truck for about 9 years and drove from Mexico to Alaska 3 times. And
That's absolutely amazing. You know, I track on YouTube van life and various videos about alternative lifestyles. And I'm fascinated by alternative lifestyles, whether it's people living in tiny homes or living in vans and traveling the world. Mm. It sounds like you were doing this before it was actually popular.
Yeah, absolutely. It was it seemed to be the norm with the people I was hanging out with at the time. But yeah. As I leave the industry, I realize how kind of fringe it was at the time. But it was certainly living the dream for me at the time.
Yeah, and I think that actually started a whole business for you, too. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a bit about living on the edge. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break. And, Sean, what I'd love to do is maybe share with our listeners some of your experiences of living on the edge and some of those expeditions. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Set. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Sean Stratton, and we were just talking a little bit about his background. He got into what was called probably a unique background for most people's careers in the adventure wilderness area. He has a company called Live More. Now, Sean, during the break, you and I had the opportunity to chat a little bit about lessons learned, you know, and maybe what you can do is tell us a little bit about some of the stories or experiences that you've had within the wilderness space.
Yeah, it's obviously there's plenty there after 15 years or so of focused expeditions, but you know, a couple of the ones I've highlighted in the book, you know, with the team building leadership lessons. One is in India, I was leading an expedition in the Himalayas in India, in a really remote section, really close to the China border, and ended up having a student at the time, a 20-year-old college student from New York, and he went to get water one afternoon for dinner, and he ended up slipping down a kind of a 60-degree dirt slope. He tried to take the fast way down to the water to get back the lazy man's way, and tripped over, I think, his shoelaces at the top of the ridge and fell down this dirt slope, which is seemed to be kind of a harmless slide down a dirt slope. But as he got to the bottom, he ended up breaking his tibia and fibula.
Oh, wow.
His leg. And it was not only just a break. It was an open fracture, so he had a bone sticking out of his leg. And now we're at 12,000 feet, you know, in the fall in the Himalayas, and we've got to deal with this situation, which I could never have imagined after, you know, 15 years of being trained in first aid. I'd never dealt with a broken bone and had to see if that training was going to kick into gear. But as I focused on myself at the beginning of this ordeal and kind of wondered how I was going to get out, I was the lead instructor on this expedition. I had two co-instructors, and you know, pretty quickly after I kind of came to my senses, I realized it wasn't about me and it wasn't about me getting them out of there and being perfect. It was about this team. And I was just amazed how everybody on their team kind of knew their role and what to do in this situation. And if they didn't know what to do, they asked and they jumped in and they helped wherever they could. And they were selfless and were just giving of themselves to get through this. We ended up, building a splint and dealing with the situation we could there. We had a satellite phone and got in touch with our company based in, outside the mountains in India and then in the U.S. and then had to get in touch with the American Embassy and the Indian Air Force to try to get a rescue. There's no 911 over there. And ended up being 19 hours we had them in the field until they could get a massive Indian Air Force rescue helicopter in. To the mountains and pick them up kind of the following day. And so it was quite the ordeal for everybody involved, and especially me as a leader. And but in reflection, I was just amazed of how everybody knew their role. And that's kind of the big lesson I take from that one, is just kind of knowing your role on a team. And if you don't know your role, you've got to ask and you've got to set clear expectations. And too many teams I work with in the corporate environment, people just don't even really know what is expected of them. They don't know what the clear expectations are, and they're really not sure of their actual role. They may have been hired for one role, but in reality, many of us know that role is never what it seems to be. And so that's just, you know, one of the many stories that I touch on in the book.
Yeah, that's, you know, it is pretty amazing. I mean, when you and you got me thinking about that too, role versus responsibility, or role and responsibility, and how often when we are part of a team, we don't have that clarity exactly what you're supposed to do. But to use an expression, when push comes to shove, and I don't know if that's a Newfoundland expression or what, but I often use it. Well, push comes to shove, you know, what do you naturally fall into, you know, and with the training, I mean, that isn't that part of it for most, say, even emergency response workers, that they're trained to actually deal with situations like this?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, it's ideally you're not thinking too much and you're just reacting and that training is taking over. And the thing is that when you don't do this regularly, you never know how you're going to react. You know, people work in emergency rooms, they're regularly stretched and pushed, and paramedics and firefighters and that, but you know, general first responders aren't into that scene every day. And so it is really nice that you can fall back and trust your training.
Now you have some experience in, and I'm going to just sort of be all over the place, and you can bring me somewhere else if you want, but you have some experience actually hiking and being on glaciers and that too, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. There was, spent a lot of time on glaciers in Alaska and British Columbia and the Yukon, a little bit in the Himalayas as well, and one story I touch on in the book is actually in the Waddington Mountain Range, about 100 kilometers north of Whistler, really remote area. I had to fly in on a float plane and spend a couple days to get up even on the glacier. We ended up spending like 22 days crossing the Hermatha ice field. And
wow.
One section on this, one time on this glacier, we ended up almost losing a co-instructor. She had to go with a helicopter to do a re-ration, and so she jumped in the helicopter that came in to drop off some food, and they were going to drop off food. We were going to be in another 10 days. They were going to put a cache down, and by the time the helicopter was trying to fly back to drop her off where we were, the fog had settled in so much where we were that he couldn't land, and he had to basically kick her out of the helicopter in a spot about 10 kilometers away on the glacier, and almost a little rock island in the middle of the glacier, and basically had to wait there for us to come and rescue her in the middle of the night on rope teams. Glaciers, you can't just go hiking like you would in the woods. You have to be attached on a rope because it's open crevasses all over the place that you could potentially fall in, and then hidden crevasses as well. And that was a big lesson about being prepared and being ready for anything. We never suspected she wouldn't be able to get back to camp that night, and fortunately she did have a bit of warm clothes, but not a lot.
Not a lot, and she managed to survive the night, obviously. It's a positive story. Or not, we'd be talking about something else. So what was the main lesson learned there?
A lot of it's just be prepared. You know, she was supposed to be gone for 20 minutes and come back to us, and ended up being like 10 hours that she was out there. So she did, when she jumped in the helicopter, she did grab an extra jacket, and she did have a radio. And she grabbed that, you know, we had kind of the handheld Motorola radios that we can communicate with us. with each other. Unfortunately, she had that, and even as once we made communication contact with her, where she was kind of on this rock island, we made set that we'd only talk every hour, every half hour, so we could save the batteries and whatnot. But yeah, luckily she had a few of those key elements, and it worked out okay, and we could find her. She had a headlamp, so because we were, you know, got there in the middle of the night, and we're for a while following her flashing headlamp to get to where she was.
Well, so. That's good that she had that, so be prepared. I think what we need to do is just take a short break and come back prepared for our next segment. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Sean Stratton, and Sean has had an incredible wilderness, living on the edge life experience by the nature of the work he does. I don't have too often where I get to meet people who've hiked glaciers and who've been in raging rivers and on the side of mountains and in Asia and having very challenging situations going on. You know, Shauna, we were talking a little bit about your past, really, just some of these experiences that you had over 15 years. What's happening now? Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're involved in right now.
Yeah, you know, I've got several things on the go, like a serial entrepreneur that I am.
Yeah,
I think you are a little bit of you as well.
Oh yeah, total serial entrepreneur. I've been thinking about putting it on my bio.
Yeah, exactly.
Serial entrepreneur.
Always thinking of the next project. But I'll tell you, one really exciting project I'm involved with right now is that I've started kind of from scratch last spring, and it's coming up soon. Is an international vegan film festival, kind of the first of its kind in the world. And, yeah, that's coming up October 14th, and it's taken up a lot of time and headspace, and I'm really, really excited about it.
Okay, so if it is the first time, I mean, when you talk about International Vegan Film Festival, that sort of, well, first of all, let's talk about what a vegan is. I have all sorts of questions around the festival, but let's, you know, what if people are listening and they have no idea what a vegan is? So what is a vegan? And we'll go, then we'll work around it.
Sure, I'm not sure what the actual Wikipedia definition is
yeah,
of it, but it's there's a couple different sides to veganism, and kind of the main one is that you don't eat or consume in any way animal products. So anything that comes with a head, comes from a head person, a thing with a head and eyes and a heartbeat, is considered an animal, and we don't eat any of those products. And so, you know, a lot of times people will say that come into it from a dietary perspective and say that they eat a whole food plant-based diet or a plant-based diet. And then the step further would be kind of the veganism, in that you don't consume any animal products whatsoever. And so that kind of flows into your clothing, all the tools you use in your everyday life, whether it's the leather in your car seats or the shoes that you wear, the jackets that you wear. So you don't, you know, consume any animal products is kind of more the strict vegan. But some people, you know, come from an animal or just the plant, whole food plant-based diet, and you know, they keep it as a diet.
That to me, that right away, when you give me like the extreme definition, like no animal consumption whatsoever, to me it just sounds like a huge challenge to even just eating a plant-based diet. Now, when you say eating a plant-based diet, you mean also like eggs and stuff like this too, right? You wouldn't do any byproducts of an animal too, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. No eggs, nothing that comes from an animal. So it's not just that we're not killing animals, but we're not harming them in any way. And you know, there's plenty of documentation of the dairy industry and the chicken and the egg industry and how harmful those aspects of their animal life is. They're not being killed, but they're definitely being, you know, utilized and abused. And
And that's what you're concerned about. Now, how did you get into vegan? Like, you know, you and I joked a little bit, and you asked me where I was at in my diet journey, and I say, well, I'm a semi-vegetarian vegan. So I'm sort of, which sounds like I'm not anything, but you'd have to understand the components of that, right?
Yeah, some people call folks like you pre-vegans.
Pre-vegans, we're not quite there yet, but I get it. So how did you, because I don't think you were always a vegan. I mean,
not at all. It's only actually been just over 3 years. My wife kind of led the charge for us. I ate vegetarian diets a lot just on expeditions, just for the sake of, we can't be hauling around meat for a month at a time. But about 3 years ago, we watched a few documentaries, and I think my wife was dealing with some running injuries, and heard from, you know, somebody that your running injuries can heal a lot quicker on a plant-based diet. And then we watched a few really impactful documentaries. One is Veg-cated and one was Forks Over Knives. And after seeing these, and for us, originally it was really the health benefits. And we're both very healthy, fit athletes, endurance athletes. And we just wanted to take our health and fitness to the next level. It's not like we were, you know, had some chronic disease or chronic issues. We're just, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say health fanatics, but just, you know, wanted to take our health to the next level. And that was kind of our gateway into it. And as we expanded and learned more about it, then, you know, we got more concerned about obviously the animal welfare side of things and the environmentalism side of things. And took it from there.
Yeah,
now we've raised three kids on it.
Well, there you go. And, you know, and again, I mean, I want to just sort of make sure people understand that this is a life journey. I mean, you know, this is not something
Absolutely.
That you just woke up when you're 15 and said, I think I'll be a vegan. Right? I mean, this
it's not a diet. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle, right? And I think that's what a lot of people sort of miss out and everything. Now, you just said an interesting point. You said you're raising your kids on it. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I have three kids right now, three girls, three very beautiful, healthy girls. They're 1, 5, and 7. And so the 5 and 7-year-old had a couple of years before they turned vegan. But the 1-year-old has been vegan.
That's all they know.
Year of her life. But it hasn't been any problems at all. They're very, very healthy, active kids. And they're into it. They ask questions. You know, we're not hardcore, you know, preaching to them. We're not trying to brainwash them or anything like that. We just kind of gently guide them along, and we haven't had any issues. Sometimes there's challenges at school with different things they're eating at school or birthday parties. And you know, one thing about veganism is that they're not. Your goal is not to be perfect.
Yeah.
And so if they go to a birthday party and there's a cake and there's probably eggs in the cake, sure, I'm not going to hold them back from eating that. If it's under our roof in our house, then they're going to be eating vegan, you know, vegan food. But if they go out and there's a cheese pizza at the birthday party, you know, I'm not going to push back. And
yeah.
I'm sure when they get in their teenage years, they're going to probably want to experiment and push back and challenge. And you know, I expect that. And yeah. I'll be happy to enjoy it.
It's interesting how you learn those life lessons, because my youngest, who's now a young man, but I mean, he was diagnosed celiac when he was 9 years of age, and it changed everything. And I'm not talking about a sensitivity to gluten. I'm talking about celiac disease. And just like what you said, you know, you end up making all the appropriate changes in your household. But when it came to things like parties and stuff, we, you know, and really I have to put this on my wife's side, I appreciate that she did this, but she would make stuff and have it in the freezer that he could take to parties, right? You
mm-hmm.
know, so he never mm-hmm. was without the birthday cake. It's just that he couldn't have regular birthday cake, and you know, and,
right.
and so there was just ways to manage it. And it sounds to me like you guys are sort of doing the same thing, right? You're recognizing it for what it is.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one thing I do is every Friday they've had, and it bugs me, they have pizza that they take out at school, and so all the kids are eating pizza from a local pizza shop, which, you know, doesn't offer vegan pizzas. And so what I've done is every Thursday night now, before Friday, I have, you know, homemade vegan pizzas for supper, and then I have leftovers, and so they can take pizza Friday for lunch.
So they're just like one of the other kids, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, and that's the important, you know, it sounds strange, but this just from a parent who's raised a couple of kids, you know, that's so important, you know, to the kids
mm-hmm.
that they sort of blend in, that they fit in, right?
Yeah.
That they're not, you know, focused on in that respect. You know, and that part of that whole vegan journey in that is it sounds to me like it's just really been something that you've done over time. Have you learned any, can you give us a short little lesson before we end our segment and go into our next thing?
Yeah, it's probably one of the greatest regrets I have that I didn't do this 20 years ago. I remember when I was 20, I touched on it. I think I was vegetarian for a month or something and didn't really know much about it, but, it was, yeah, I wish I'd done it. But, you know, my wife actually ended up going cold turkey. One day she went, she learned about it, and then she did this 30-day challenge. And for me, I did it over 3 months. And the biggest thing is that, you know, people's got to do it on their own time and their own pace. And you know this. Obviously, you're going through it yourself. And,
yeah.
It can't be, you know, this is what we're going to do, and you got to do it.
Yeah, and for my reasons, I always share with our listeners, I mean, I'm doing it for health reasons. I'm not doing it for... you know, sometimes it's just what it is, right? And so you've got certain things going on in your life and you got to make adjustments. And those adjustments are a real challenge to go through, but there's a lot to learn. From my perspective, I don't think you should ever really do it cold turkey, but for some people it would work. I think you need to educate yourself because you have to do it right so you remain healthy. Sean, we need to take a short break, but we'll just come back. So our listeners, I'm hanging out with Sean Stratton. Interesting man, individual. And we're going to talk a little bit more about his life and some experiences when we return. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm here with Sean Stratton. We were talking about wilderness experience, living on the edge, becoming vegan. You know, quite interesting. You, in the last segment, you mentioned that you have three beautiful young daughters and everything. So I'm just curious, how's that working out for you?
It's working out great. It's got all its challenges, as you can imagine. And every day is a learning experience. They teach me something every day. It's you know, I say kids are an interesting relationship, and I think with, you know, any adult relationship, if kids treated you the way that adults treat you the way the kids do, like, you would be breaking it off, and just when you're about to break it off, then they do something that just, like, pulls on your heart and makes you love them all over again, and they never quite get to that point of you actually kicking them out of the house.
Well, wait till they're teenagers.
Exactly.
Or they're in their early 20s, right, and go, I'm tired of feeding you. You got to stand on your own. It's funny. I often say to my boys that I'm a better man today in my life because I had kids, and for myself, it was boys. I've learned more from them about being a man than, you know, they've taught me more in my life that I could ever learn from anybody else or any other experience. So, I mean, that's always been my view, and that's my looking back. But I do understand now, you and I were chatting one time, and I'm pretty sure you told me that you were like the primary caregiver. And I know you're married and that, right? What are some of the like common struggles you have as like the primary caregiver? Because you're like a stay at home dad, aren't you?
Yeah, essentially. I sometimes call myself a work-from-home dad.
A work-from-home dad, okay,
There's all kinds of labels we can put on ourselves, but my wife, fortunately or unfortunately, is a physician, she has a very demanding job. She's a spine surgeon and just finished up all her training, her first year of practice in Ottawa, it's an extremely demanding job, fortunately, I'm in a flexible situation and having my own company, my own businesses that I can kind of manage my time a little easier. In the last few years and more in the last probably 6 months, we've really chosen for me to kind of be the really focused primary care provider and scale back some of my business interests right now while the kids are still young to be that at-home parent. It hasn't certainly been all pussycats and rainbows. There's been challenges for sure. I know I'm fortunate to be in this position to be able to spend extra quality time with my kids at this age. But at the same time, there's many days I'm banging my head against the wall. I think I'm going to go find a job.
It's amazing how that is. And you know what? It's interesting. We both sort of share this. Now I'm in a different part of my journey. But 15 years ago, I left the corporate world to form a Brave World. And very similar, I guess, to yourself in that when I did that, I really sort of became the primary caregiver at home. So I had two boys. And they're now a lot older, but the same idea, you know. But the interesting experience I had, and this is a little maybe insight from my side, is that I ended up being there more for my boys than if I had a regular job. Where I went to work every single day and that, you know, I could make sure they went to school. I could make sure they were home. I took care of a lot of the sort of activities. My wife had a professional career in another place, but we did make it work and balance out. And it's interesting when you have that opportunity to work from home, how you can actually blend family in with your professional work that you do.
Yeah, it's very, very fortunate to be able to do that. There definitely has been challenges, though, and just, you know, some of it's just mental for me and just dealing with the stereotypes and going to the play groups and, you know, being the only dad in the group and going to the park and getting the strange looks from all the moms and
Yeah, people do that, right? It's interesting, you know, when and maybe it's different because I have boys, but I used to go to the playgrounds with my kids, and I'd watch all the parents, right? And they'd all be sitting around and on their cell phones or whatever. I would actually go and do the monkey bars with my son. You know, and I had a blast, right? We had a blast. It was really good. If somebody wanted to talk to you about your business, about your wilderness expeditions, or you as a speaker, or the consulting work that you do, Sean, even about the veganism that we touched on, how would they go about connecting with you?
Yeah, the best way is you can find me on my website. It's just seanstratton.com, S-H-A-W-N. Yeah. S-T-R-A-T-T-O-N, or, you know, I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and all the other places, but
they can connect.
The Vegan Film Festival is at OIVFF, so Ottawa International Vegan Film Festival, OIVFF.com, and you can find out information there. But I'd be happy to chat with anyone. I know people that are struggling or starting to be at-home dads. It's a challenge. It's a mental space to go through, and it's great to have support. And that's one thing that's really helped me, is I've connected with a group of guys on some different online groups, and having that support can be very helpful.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I want to go back a little bit about the vegan festival, because I never did really finish that thinking off. I had you talk about what veganism and whole food and everything is. But so it's called the Vegan Film Festival. Is that correct? I got that correct?
Yep, the Ottawa International.
Yeah, and so when we talk about that, I'm just curious, is it like a film festival that's all about being a vegan? Like, is it all about different movies and documentaries that are about veganism? Like, explain that a little bit more. What's the general concept around it?
The general concept is that all the films are vegan-themed.
Okay.
So there's some kind of a vegan theme throughout. We've got four main categories of it. So one is health and nutrition, one is environmentalism, one is animal welfare, and the last one is lifestyle. And so they all fit into one of those categories. And we've got eight different countries represented. We've had over 29 films submitted, over 17 hours of films for the first year. I'm thrilled with that. And it's all about, you know, getting the message out about the powerful benefits of veganism, and to inspire vegans that are you know, vegans now to maintain it, and even more important, to try to maybe educate and inspire folks that are like yourself, maybe pre-vegans or thinking about dabbling in it or thinking about it, to inspire them to take over their health and lifestyle into this movement. And I hope to take it around the world one day and show kind of a 3-hour segment of kind of a best of best, and grow with it over the years.
It actually sounds very exciting, especially if you're on a path of I'm going to call it whole food, or plant life living, or even if it's just a combination where you just want to, you know, you just want to eat less meat, be a bit more vegetarian, but be a bit of vegan. So I am very comfortable with people being blended or hybrids of things. I'm not one of those extremists. I never have been. What a show we've been having. I think it's awesome. If you had a final thought for our listeners, overall, based on your professional background, what would that final thought be?
I think a lot of the direction that I've had has been driven by my values and reevaluating my values throughout my life. And that's one thing that's really helped me come to grips in the last 6 months of kind of being that at-home dad, is really looking at my values and, letting the values drive the way, not the ego.
Yeah.
And so I'd encourage people that are struggling maybe with the direction they want to take with their life or positions they're in right now, of really take a deep dive and have a look at what's important to them, what's most important to them, and putting that ego aside and really taking a deep dive in your values. And I think you can never go wrong when you start following the values that you're true to.
Awesome. Sean, thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. If you have a thought or an idea or a question, send me a note at richard@setforsuccess.ca. For our listeners, I really appreciate the guest obviously tuning in. I appreciate the listeners tuning in. And remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.